This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Arman Shrocki. Each week, Arman will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm pleased to have Peter with me here. And Peter, welcome to the show. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yes, certainly. I am founder, CEO, and chief scientist of Igo.ai. And we have conversational AI platform that we call a chatbot with a brain. So our chatbot, you know, is a lot smarter and can be more personalized than the conventional chatbot. And my background is I started out as an electronics engineer, started my own company, electronics company, and then fell in love with software, and my company turned into a software company. I developed a ERP system, and that was quite successful. We went from the garage to 400 people and did an IPO. So it's when I left that company that for the last 20 years, my passion has been is how can we make software more intelligent, or how can we build software that can think and learn and reason the way humans do, or what people now call artificial general intelligence, or AGI. So that's really my passion. So I work both on the commercial side to commercialize the technology, and then also on the R&D side to keep increasing the intelligence of the technology.
Okay, fantastic. And I know that from your perspective, these technologies like chatbot, AI, intelligence behind it has gone through generations to get here. How would you characterize that kind of evolution to say this was the first, you know, a step we took, and then the second step taken, and now we are in this phase? How would you characterize that so the audience can get a better understanding of how it evolved and where we are today?
Yes, I mean, the field of artificial intelligence has been around for about 60 years, but I think there's a useful way to sort of slice it up into the different phases or eras. And DARPA actually called this the three waves of AI. Mm-hmm. And the first wave is really what people were working on for the last, you know, for the first 40 years or so, which people now call good old-fashioned AI. And it's really expert systems. And a good example of that would be IBM's Deep Blue, the world chess champion. I don't know if it was late 80s or early 90s. So that's kind of rule-based, where people write logic-based systems, you know, expert systems and so on, to solve problems. And the second wave really hit us like a tsunami about 10 years ago, which is all about big data statistical systems. So that's when, you know, companies like Google and Amazon figured out how they could use the massive amount of data that they've accumulated and the massive amount of computing power that was available to basically build useful AI systems. So examples of that would be the advances made in autonomous driving, you know, or driving assistance in cars, image recognition, language translation, and speech recognition. All of those areas have benefited very a lot, tremendously, by this statistical big data approach. And now the most recent variation of that, that most people are familiar with now, is ChatGPT. So it's a variation of that, and it's called a generative AI, but it's still statistical AI using massive amounts of information to build models that can then do useful things. But that's a second wave. And the third wave that will get us much closer, will get us to human-like and human-level intelligence is what's called cognitive AI. So that is really building systems that are inherently geared to the requirements of human intelligence. So, for example, you don't need massive amounts of information. A human, for example, you can show a child that's never seen an elephant before, you can show it one picture of an elephant, and it'll be able to recognize pink elephants and upside down elephants and so on. Whereas these statistical AI systems require hundreds or thousands of examples for them to work. So they can't easily learn quickly and incrementally. And for example, ChatGPT cost $100 million to train the model, and it took weeks to do that. So the third wave of AI, cognitive AI, works more like a human, where it can learn very quickly and it can learn incrementally, and it adjust its knowledge. And that's really what we've been working on for the last 20 years. But the mainstream of AI, almost all of the work in AI, is really on statistical big data approaches, because that's what the big companies have. And, that's a hammer they've got, so everything looks like a nail. And it's been, of course, incredibly successful, and a lot of people have made a lot of money.
And how does it then relate when it comes to, for example, personalization or hyper-personalization of communication with someone, with customers? How does it play, and how does it work in that regard? How do you compare that with Gen AI, for example? Which one is more efficient? Which one can be more effective?
Yes. Well, exactly, because statistical AI, as I said, aren't really good at learning in real time on the fly. They need to sort of go to the factory to be trained, with lots of data, and a very expensive process. So it inherently doesn't lend itself very well to learn quickly for, millions of different users. And so you really need a system that can, where the individual, hyper-personalization, so that you're not just a demographic, but you are an individual. So, example, one of our big customers is 1-800-Flowers group of companies, Harry and David, Popcorn Factory, and so on. And they came to us and they tried other statistical technology and other chatbots, and they couldn't get this hyper-personalization to work. And, with us, it can offer a concierge-like service that each customer, it'll learn who you want to buy presents for, what kind of presents, for what occasion, and so on. And it can do that for their 20 million customers, each individually, because it can learn as you are having a conversation with a customer. It remembers what you said, and it uses that information, so it can learn on the fly. And you really can't do that very well with statistical approaches. They don't. The new information you give them doesn't really get integrated into the knowledge base. Apart from the concerns that people have about privacy and so on.
Yeah. So when it comes to these, LLM technologies, and as you say, very statistical, it's understandable the way the engine works, because then it just gathers all of that information and statistically knows that what should I say the word after this word and these kind of things. But when it comes to what you just said, that is, even it can be personalized for millions of individuals, how does it learn fast enough, and how can it kind of decide that this piece of information can be used for everyone, is general, versus the other piece of information, I need to use it only as a personalized way for a particular person? That seems to be something that, as a human, maybe we can at some degree understand. So theoretically, it should be doable by another artificial intelligence to be done. But can you expand upon that? How is possible to be done?
Yes, it's a very good question. So the approach that we use, we totally isolate the information that you learn from each individual. And the way we do that is you can think of our brain having three layers. So the inner layer is information that applies to everyone. You know, every company, every person, that's just common sense knowledge that you need to have, how to have a conversation, how to greet people, about people and places and so on. So that is the inner layer of the brain. The next layer, the middle layer of the brain, is the information that's specific to a company. So that would be their business rules, you know, their products. And it may include proprietary information. So you want to keep that, you know, special for each company that is using it. So that has to be trained on, you know, on the company's information. And typically there are also integration to the backend system. So there'd be APIs so that it can also get, you know, the latest product information availability and you know, where your order is and things of that nature. So that's a middle layer of the brain that's unique for every company. And then the outer layer is unique for every single user that uses the system. And these three layers are integrated in practice as you're having a conversation, but they are completely isolated so that what one customer tells you isn't going to be known by any other customer. So that is the way we can achieve hyper-personalization and still have, you know, a high level of confidentiality and privacy.
And this chatbot technology that you described it briefly as chatbot with a brain behind it, how would you characterize it with regard to the best persona or the best, maybe persona is not the right, but the right profile of companies that can get the best out of this technology? What are the use cases that fits?
Yeah, so our technology really is totally agnostic in terms of use cases, companies, industries, and so on. It is a very general conversational AI technology. So, you know, banks can use it, can be used for medical applications, can use for salespeople to help them integrate with Salesforce, for example, and, you know, help them manage their sales process. It could be used for people with, say, diabetes who want a coach to help them manage their diabetes so it can learn about your food preferences. You know, you love broccoli or you hate broccoli or you're vegetarian or whatever. It can also be used as a co-pilot as a front end to complex software, because today a lot of software is actually very complex and people don't get to know all of the options, or you have to go down lots of menus. So if you have a conversational AI like IGO in front of your software, integrated into your software, you can just tell it what you want it to do. And, you know, it can then get you to the right place or actually even do what you want for you. So now, seeing your podcast and your focus is on SaaS, I just want to mention here, currently our focus is on working with large enterprise customers. Mm-hmm. And we actually deploy this behind their firewall, so not as a SaaS service. Mm-hmm. And typically, they're actually very happy about that because they have full control. And these days, it's basically deployed in their cloud, you know, as part of their technology stack. Now, for smaller companies, that may not be appropriate. They, you know, may not have the expertise or overhead to run their own cloud service or be involved with that at all. But typically, large companies actually prefer having this deployed behind their firewall.
And how do you see the future may play on that front? For example, if you go 10 years down the road and then we say this technology, do you see it possibly as one of the services available on any cloud you go, and then you can just utilize it as you would any other services? How would you see this would play out normally, and the way you would see it, the potential that it has in the next decade?
Yes. So there's both sort of the enterprise commercial application, and then there's the consumer personal applications. And we're really super excited about both of those areas. So at the moment, there's still a fair amount of human labor involved to understand the customer's business rules, to gather all of that information, and to train the system with this and to integrate it into their back end. So it's not that you can just go to a website and press a button and say, hey, I want this extra service. You know, there's just too much information that needs to be gathered and the system set up. So in the future, we see the technology itself becoming more and more capable of understanding requirements. So it'll be more like the chatbot technology itself will interview the customer or the enterprise customer and gather all the information, you know, get the internal documents, you know, training material from the call center maybe, and then configure itself basically to a large degree so that the implementation will be much quicker and you know, less expensive. And I mean, even now, it only takes us a few weeks typically to set up that, but still be better if it could happen, you know, in a few days with much less human involvement. And also then as business rules change, that you could just essentially, an administrator could just go to the chatbot console and say, here are the business rules that have changed, and the system would then configure itself. So we're not quite there yet, but that's sort of how I see the future, that, as you say, it would be more like a service that companies could more easily just integrate into their system by it sort of self-configuring. Now, on the consumer side, individual side, what we're extremely excited about is to be able to offer sometime in the near future, hopefully, what we call a personal assistant. Now, it really should be called a personal assistant, because there are three different meanings of the word personal that come into play here. The first personal is that you own it. It serves your purpose. It's not owned by some mega corporation to serve their purpose, you know, like Alexa or Siri. I mean, Siri probably won't tell you about the latest Samsung phone, you know, and Alexa probably won't tell you about the specials at Walmart, you know, and so on. So that you own it and serves your agenda, that's the first personal. The second personal is the hyper-personalization. You're not a demographic, you are an individual, and it'll learn, as you use the system, it'll learn your preferences, your history, your likes, you know, who you interact with, and it will do things for you, basically, that you don't have to struggle with chatbots and websites and things. You know, it'll do the things for you. And the third personal, or the third personal, is really the issue of privacy, that it will only share things that you tell it to share with whoever. You know, so certain things you share with your spouse, other things you share with your coworkers, and some things you share with Amazon.
And what about, I mean, there are a lot of discussions, of course, around the fact that as we are using these artificial intelligence technologies more and more, we may get to the point that it's great, it's working, it's convenient, it's smart, it's personalized, all of those great things. But then at one point, a mistake is being made, and it might be a bad mistake, and we want the traceability to better understand how it happened and why it happened, so we can prevent it or we can correct it. And that is any system that we need to make it better. We need to be able to understand the root cause to get there and just make it better. Is it something that in these technologies would be possible to really go there and diagnose if some responses came that we don't know why, or still we are at the stage that, you know, we just need to reset the training and start over if that happened and we don't know why it happened?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, excellent question. Because with statistical approaches and generative AI, they really are black boxes. I mean, even the CEO of, you know, OpenAI, Sam Altman, says, we don't know how these things come to their what they say. And that's inherent in those statistical models. They basically just have this huge, huge network that's inscrutable. It's a black box. Now, with the cognitive AI approach that we have, we actually have a scrutable knowledge graph. So everything that the system knows and does, you can actually trace down. So you can trace exactly why it came to a certain conclusion or said a certain thing. It might require some sophisticated tools to analyze it because it could be a very complex decision that it made. But everything is scrutable inherently. And the beauty of that is, and if it has some incorrect information or some knowledge that needs to be changed, something that, a procedure has changed, a business rule has changed, and you can actually go in and specifically change that piece of information. Whereas statistical systems, second wave type systems, have the problem that if you do additional training, they can suffer what's called catastrophic forgetting. That's actually a problem that's been known in neural networks for a long time. So that things they knew beforehand that you could rely on suddenly have changed as you train. And it's a whole black box. So that's another reason why this second wave, the statistical or generative AI, is not going to get us to human level AI because, it's not auditable, it's not explainable, and you basically can't fix things or track down things.
And do you think the way Gen AI works today, is it more about something that at one point when cognitive AI is completely capable of doing a lot of things and then we just move out of Gen AI kind of a stage and we move to the next? Or you think this will be complementary in the future and there are some use cases that anyway Gen AI would be good at, but maybe it's overhyped now, but maybe it can find some of these use cases and stay there and serve that purpose very well while the cognitive AI can find its own way and just play, the role?
The generative AI is incredibly good at generating ideas or generating things. I mean, the term is appropriate there. But you always need to have a human in the loop to basically say, if anything's critical, to evaluate it and say, does this make sense? Is this right? Is this useful? Is this appropriate? And so on. But the ability to create, when you're looking at visual creations or, creating a poem or, lyrics or story ideas, it's really very, very good at that. So in that sense, probably there will always be a use for that kind of generative, really truly generative application. And the interesting thing here is with cognitive AI, like humans, cognitive AI will inherently be a very good tool user. Mm-hmm. So instead of where statistical AI is a tool that humans use, cognitive AI can become a tool user. So it can then use ChatGPT to create something for you. So you wouldn't, for example, a cognitive AI, you wouldn't expect it to be a world champion chess player, but it can use a chess program or chess computer if it, needed to play a good game of chess against somebody. So it's moving from it being a tool to being a tool user. And yes, I definitely see, these big large language models be very, very useful in things that that really require that kind of openness and creativity that they do provide.
Fantastic. And then there will be a time. Oh, by the way, before I forget, I wanted to ask you, all of your examples you provided on some of these use cases goes back to some kind of customer service, but I have to imagine that from your perspective, that's not the only use case that you see this cognitive AI can do. Mm-hmm. For example, it might go to medical use cases and provide some kind of advice on that front, on the healthcare side, or it may go to other use cases. Just to clarify, what's your kind of, how do you envision for other sectors in the future to use this technology?
Yes. So the sort of current near-term uses, you know, I mentioned one already, like a diabetes coach, you know, something that can help you manage diabetes or to help you train for a marathon or, you know, so these personal use cases, it can also be used internally in a company, you know, and for HR or as a service desk to help with technical problems. So all of those are current use cases. So obviously replacing call center operators, which companies are having a really hard time finding enough staff, training them, and retaining staff. It's a real struggle. With cognitive AI, with our kind of system, you can really provide a better service than humans can because it's available 24/7. There's no wait time. It's totally consistent. It has immediate access to all of the information, and it remembers the previous time you called in, and it, you know, can follow up, which a human can't match that kind of thing. Now, we're not at human level intelligence, so there are, you know, always more difficult things that require human understanding, human judgment, or a greater degree of personal empathy that you really don't want to fake. But, you know, there's a huge percentage that can be handled and actually be done better than a human. Now, looking further out, our ultimate vision as we get closer and closer to human level intelligence is to have AI researchers. So imagine you train up one cognitive AI to be a cancer researcher. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been trained up with all the knowledge to do cancer research. You now make 1 million copies of that. Mm-hmm. You now have 1 million PhD level cancer researchers chipping away at the problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of progress we can make then. And you take this now and move it into designing better batteries, more effective batteries, you know, other problems with energy, with pollution, or even governance, you know, to basically to be able to apply a lot more intelligence to these problems that are facing us and that can improve human life.
And something that as high impact as research is training, right? So, and it might be even before getting into that sophistication that it can actually do the research for new topics, it might be able to just train. So I cannot, you know, stop myself from thinking that there would be a point sooner than later probably that you sit down and say, rather than I learn this topic from a human, I'd rather to learn this topic from this cognitive AI brain. And
yes,
it might be marketing, it might be a new language, it might be some other topics. And I just wanted to sit down in front of, you know, this chatbot or this software and just get trained on this topic. And I trust this entity, this intelligence, to really be a great teacher for me.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, there's a big push right now to already use large language models, you know, in education. Now, it still suffers a limit. I mean, it can be a fantastic tool to do this, but it still suffers the problems of it's not going to be hyper-personalized to you, so it's not going to be that hyper-personalized teacher for you, trainer, that coach. And the other thing is that can get things wrong, so you need to be you need to be careful. It needs to either have so many guardrails that you're crippling it, or if you take to the extent that you don't have the guardrails, it might give you misleading information, as we see. So future cognitive AI will, you know, overcome those limits. And we are, for example, also talking to certain universities as a personal kind of a personal assistant to individual students. You know, when you first get to university, when you first get to college, there's just so much that needs to be learned to orientate yourself, you know, and how to do things, where to find things, and, you know, things you need to learn. So having that personal assistant for each individual student that is hyper-personalized to them, but can help them find their way around and help them with their studies, to us, it's a very exciting application. And, you know, we hope we can get into that sooner rather than later.
Fascinating. Would you mind, Peter, sharing a book that you liked with our audience?
You know, the book that comes to mind is The Mind's Eye. It's a book about how the mind works, and it has a whole lot of story. I don't know if you've ever read it.
No, I don't. With it?
Yeah, it's Douglas Hofstadter and Daniel Dennett, the two authors, and they're fantastic stories that really make you think about the mind. And so I think it's a fascinating book, The Mind's Eye.
Yeah, I haven't read this book, but I bet this is one of the books that my wife would be fascinated with to read, because whenever we go to travel together and I put the Audible book, my book normally is the business model optimization or some other aspects of software, and always she picks this kind of fascinating books about the brain and how it works. And so I have learned a few things because I listen to those books sometimes. But this fascinating topic for sure. Thank you very much, Peter, for joining this discussion and conversation.
Yeah, thank you for the good questions.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Arman Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to sasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.